Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's been so busy here, Jordan Hayward Day here at Catholic Answers, that I have forgotten to...
Day or month?
Year. Gordon Hayward year. 2025. Okay. Gordon Hayward year here at Catholic Answers. Everybody else is treating it as the Jubilee year, but we're treating it as Gordon Hayward year here. 888-318-7884 is the number, but I have to just read this. Joe spoke on the opening night of the 2024 Annual Apologetics Conference. Learn from me the parable, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ. Scott Hahn was there. Kimberly Hahn was there. Father Sebastian Walsh was there. Billy Junker. Here's the game that we're going to play today. We want to give away an audible version of Joe's bestseller, Pope Peter. And so we have to ask you, what was unusual about Joe's appearance that night? So if you're on the line, and folks on the line are usually listening to the show, sometimes doing other things, but if you're on the line and you're listening, the first one who says what was exceptional about Joe's appearance at last year's annual apologetics conference, where he gave the opening talk, will win the audio version of Pope Peter. Did you do the audio yourself, Joe?
On Pope Peter, I did.
Yeah, you did. Okay, so that's what you're getting. You're getting Joe audio version of his own book, Pope Peter. I don't know who put that picture on my sheet. I can't. I was trying to do a radio program here. What are you people doing? Look, Joe's wearing a shirt that I thought looked like he was one of the Beach Boys. Somebody found a picture and they
put. I did.
Oh, you put that on there, Joe? You're messing me up, man.
In Google Images, found them wearing my exact shirt.
They're wearing the exact shirt that you're wearing.
To look like me.
No, that's 1960 when they took that picture. They are not trying to look like you 65 years later. All right.
A lot of musicians were visionaries.
Yeah,
I hear this all the time.
Let's go to Michael in Tucson, Arizona. Watch it on YouTube. Michael, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hey guys, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
Let me just start by saying, after the last segment, I now have an image stuck in my brain of Cy waking up in the morning, throwing off the covers and saying, AI on the wall. And now I got to kind of...
He would still be better than Gal Gadot.
That was mean. That was mean.
Yeah, that was mean.
I am a huge fan of Gal Gadot, but I never saw that movie. So I don't... Did your children make you watch that movie?
Yeah, I'm definitely a huge fan. What? I think she's great at everything except acting and singing.
Oh, God.
I wanted to have a comeback, but I have no comeback for that. This is a lovely person, and you're picking on her.
She seems like a lovely person. I know a lot of lovely people I would not go to see in movies, but neither here nor there.
Michael, I'm sorry. Go ahead with your question to the mean Joe Heschmeyer.
Oh, no, that's all right. Let me just set this up by saying the last 8 months for me in the church have been kind of difficult since Pope Francis put the final document of the Synod of Synodality into the ordinary magisterium. And a couple of days ago, they released. I have problems with intellectually assenting to what's in there because I have concerns with some of what's in it. So I'm like, I'll wait until I hear more about what they're going to say about it. And a couple of days ago, they released the implementation plan for it. And I read it critically, and I cannot intellectually assent to anything that's in it. And I need to know if I can still be Catholic. Anything. Nothing in it.
Tell me more about that. That's a surprising stance to take on it.
It uses the word conversion of the church 16 times.
Okay.
I will not have my church converted by modernist heresy. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if that's what it meant, that would be unacceptable. But do you think that's the most charitable read of what is being said there?
I try to be charitable in all things I do, and when I read the entire document as critically as I can, given who I am and what I know, and without guidance from somebody, I just can't bring myself to say yes to this.
Okay. Well, look, this is one of those things that's at the level of ordinary magisterium. It's not an infallible teaching document. And a lot of the things going on are just as it says. These are implementation strategies. And with an implementation strategy, there's a lot of room to disagree about the best way to do things. So take the entire situation with how do we handle the Latin Mass communities. And so you have different popes doing different things over time. And, you know, for instance, Summorum Pontificum, Benedict XVI tried to create an avenue to allow a greater freedom to celebrate the traditional Latin Mass. And Pope Francis judged that a lot of that had failed to create the kind of harmony that he thought we should be seeing. And he's not dissenting from like magisterial teaching there. It's just a question about the best mechanism and the best practice. And so you'll have differences in papal leadership styles. And it's not the job of the laity or anyone else, number one, to figure out what the best leadership approach should be. I mean, thankfully, a lot of these things are not our problems to solve. But second, we also don't have to convince ourselves that every approach the church takes to tackling a problem is the smartest and the best approach to take to tackle the problem. So there's all sorts of ways that the implementation of a thing could go badly, even if the thing itself is true. So someone who believes, for instance, in the liturgical reforms of the Second Vatican Council could still acknowledge a lot of the ways they were implemented worked pretty badly and led to pretty bad results. I mean, objectively, you can see in many parishes a total kind of destruction that happens when these things are implemented poorly. And at times, there's maybe a lack of good, clear leadership about what proper implementation should look like. All of those things are permitted. So you want to maintain a good filial attitude. You want to maintain the good attitude of a son. But that doesn't mean you have to agree with every, like, don't put the burden on yourself of believing that you have to either intellectually agree with every step in an implementation plan or leave the church. Like, trust that the same God who has gotten us 2025, well, almost, I mean, assuming that starting date of year one, but in any case, gotten us basically 2,000 years through history is going to continue to get us through history. This is not going to be the make or break moment. It's not going to be in, you know, what is the meaning of this word in a PDF on an implementation document. So don't let it trouble your heart too much would be what I would say. Like, try to have a good respect and a good obedience, but yeah, no one's asking you to become a modernist. No one's asking you to embrace heresy. And if anyone does ask you to do that, don't do that. Does that, I don't know, does that make sense? Does that give you enough of a sense of kind of a...
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. But let me just be a little bit more clear. And I would you're an educated guy and you're a scholar and you can read the document the same way I can. And I'd really like to see you do a video on this at some point, right? To my mind, in the document, it states that they are moving the responsibility for the liturgy to the parish, removing it from the bishops, and destroying the diocesan structure of the Catholic Church.
I think that's not only not the case, but also kind of runs contrary to what we actually saw, which is in many cases there was a greater centralization of liturgical authority under Pope Francis. So, I mean, for instance, the whole situation with Traditionis Custodis.
I don't know, and I just need some guidance. I'm just saying I need some guidance.
I'd be happy to take a look at the document. I would say two things. Number one, there may be room for greater decentralization of liturgical questions, meaning away from having the Vatican determine everything on a universal scale to allow more breathing room for different rites in different places. There's a history of this, and it's a history that goes back centuries. Like, you look at the period before the Council of Trent, for instance, all the different variations of the Roman Rite based on, like, where you were. Like, you had the Gallic Rite, you had these other things where every country seemingly had its own version of the Mass. And that standardized a lot more at the Council of Trent, but they still preserve some of the more ancient ones. So like the Ambrosian Rite in Milan, they still celebrate the Mass differently than the rest of the world. So that's not actually an unprecedented thing to allow local variation on things that variation is allowed on. And it's often actually quite a beautiful thing. I don't think that's going to devolve to the local level where people just ignore their bishop, because the bishop actually has canonically and theologically authority over liturgical matters in his diocese, not to the exclusion of the Pope, but he has an actual duty that if the liturgy is being done badly in his diocese, he has, again, both the right and the duty to intervene and do something about it.
Thank you.
All right, yeah, Michael. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Hang on. We want to give you a free book because it's Gordon Hayward Day here at Catholic Answers. If you'd like a free book, just tell Edgar which of the Catholic Answers books that you would like to have. The number is 888-318-7884. Right back with more. Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
You know, we talk story with each of our very unique guests for the whole hour, so that you can go deep with us as you yourself pursue your own story of heroic virtue and as you pursue intimacy with God.
The Bear Wozniak Adventure, Saturday night, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Anybody who calls and answers this question, what was exceptional about Joe Heschmeyer's attire when he spoke at last year's Catholic Answers Conference? You get a free copy of Joe's bestseller, Pope Peter, in the audio format. You get the audio book. 888-318-7884 is the number. Roman is in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Roman, welcome. Do you know what?
Howdy, guys.
Do you have any idea what was exceptional about Joe's outfit?
Unfortunately, I do not.
That's all right. You got a question for Joe?
Yeah. So I'm a recent Franciscan University graduate. So I had really good theology, really good philosophy, and no objections with this question. But I have a really hard time with explaining why marriage is between a man and a woman. Like, I get it. Just don't ask me to explain it, because that I cannot do, especially to Protestants or secular people.
Okay. Well, gotcha. I would start with, if you're talking with Protestants, if you're talking with people who accept the authority of Scripture, you can point to things like Genesis, where the two become one, man and woman. And it's very clear from Jesus' own teaching that marriage is between a man and a woman. But if you're making the argument from just reason alone to someone who is secular, I would start with asking, well, what is marriage? So maybe I'll just ask you that. Why does marriage exist in the first place?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot in front of my wife and she's just looking at me.
Because you love her. Just say that. Just say, because I love her.
Because I love her,
yes.
You become one and a lot of other things.
Joe?
Yes. Yeah. So historically, we talk about three ends or purposes of marriage. The first one is procreation and the education of children. That man and woman, and uniquely man and man and woman, this isn't going to be true of, when man and woman engage in certain actions together, children can be formed. And this is where the human race comes from in every successive generation. And forming a child properly takes a lot more than however long that action takes. You have a couple decades, basically, worth of work left to do. And it's really good and really important that both parents stick around for that. And because only one of them actually gets pregnant, it's pretty easy for one of them to, get lost on his way to get milk from the store. And so marriage exists first and foremost as a practical level, so that when children are brought into this world, they're brought into the world in a loving and stable union with a husband and wife who love each other, a mother and father who can model masculinity and femininity and teach them all these things, and two parents to love them and take care of them and protect them. That's the first purpose of marriage, and it's innately heterosexual at a biological level. Second is the unitive purpose of marriage, that the two become one. Is partly, even if you never have any kids, you and your wife live out something special in marriage. And you can look at this at a bodily, biological level. You have a respiratory system. What is that for?
Breathing.
Breathing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a circulatory system. What is that for?
That blood.
Circulation of blood. Yeah. And your reproductive system, what is that for? Well, it partly points to that first purpose, reproduction. It's right there in the name. And that points to heterosexuality. But the second thing we notice is, unlike the respiratory system, you've got a complete respiratory system, I assume. You have a complete circulatory system. You have half of a reproductive system. And your wife has the other half. And no man on earth could offer the other half of that reproductive system. And so the two of you, when you are united, your two bodies together work in tandem to create a new human being. And that is one of the ways, you know, the two become one and the two become three. And this, again, is innately heterosexual. Only a man and woman can do that. No law on earth can change this basic reality. Now, as Christians, we would recognize a third purpose of marriage as well, which is that it is a sacramental sign of the union of Christ and the church. But again, Christ is the bridegroom and the church is the bride. And so the gendered nature of that is already built into the reality of the thing. Does this make sense?
Yeah, I mean, overall, yes. And yeah, just thank you, Mr. Heschmeyer.
Hey, can I give you a recommendation for a good resource to check out? Pope Pius XI has an encyclical called Casti Connubii, CASTICONNUBII, where he talks about Christian marriage. And it talks about those three purposes of marriage. This is from like 1930. And I think there's just something so bracingly clear about this at a time when he's not responding to many of the modern challenges, because those haven't really been introduced yet. He's writing in this incredible moment, kind of a precipice moment, because this year, 1930, the Anglicans and the Lambeth Conference had just permitted contraception for the first time between husband and wife under certain circumstances. And this was a radical shift in Christian teaching. And Pius recognized that this was going to destroy the family and destroy sexuality. And he was right, it did. So that would be a good document to read, to just see what a healthier view of sexuality looks like.
Roman, if you'll hang on, we'll send you a book. We would love to send you a book on Gordon Hayward Day here at Catholic Answers Live. Thank you very much for the call and for the question. I'm going to go as quick as I can now to John in Oklahoma, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. John, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Joe Heschmeyer.
Hey there, Cy. You and Edgar could never be replaced by AI, just to let you know.
Wait, not even Edgar?
No, he can't replace Edgar. Edgar's awesome.
Oh, he's so happy right now. I'm looking over at him. He's so happy that you said that. Thank you very much. Thanks for saying that.
Hey, before I ask my question, I need everybody to do me a favor. My Bishop Coakley here in Oklahoma and the Bishop from Gallup, New Mexico, Wall, are out walking the Camino. And if everybody could keep them in their prayers while they're out there doing that.
Oh, beautiful. Wonderful bishops.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
very glad you said that.
Yeah.
Your Bishop Coakley is a KU grad, University of Kansas. Just letting everybody know. Archbishop Coakley.
I had to put that in there.
Yep.
Now, my question for Joe is, Joe, at what point and what was the purpose in all food or all animals being declared clean to eat?
So the first thing to understand is why they were originally not clean to eat. And it didn't mean sinful. It did mean like ritually impure. That this is part of this whole Jewish system of categorizing the world. And so things fit neatly into a box and they're okay, or they don't fit neatly into a box and they're not okay. So if you look at the things that are unclean, a lot of them are things that don't fit neatly into a taxonomy. So like shrimp is forbidden, but fish is okay. Fish, we know what it is. Shrimp's kind of like a fish, kind of like a bug. That's not acceptable. And if you want like a cotton shirt, that's great. If you want a mixed blend shirt with two different fabrics, that's not acceptable. And this is based on this Jewish concept of holiness, that holiness means purity, meaning entirely devoted to one thing. And this was to teach people to just approach every part of their life by doing it perfectly purely. Where if you're going to do one thing, do one thing. If you're going to eat meat, eat meat. If you're going to eat fish, eat fish. Don't mix the two. Don't put milk and meat on the same dish. You know, those kind of things. Because you're blending. Don't do two things half-heartedly. Do one thing wholeheartedly. And this preparation in every aspect, food and clothes and everything else, is to prepare them for this radical mission they have to be monotheists when they're surrounded by pagans who say anything goes. And is to teach them not to just take this blend and mix and accept everything kind of attitude. So that's why it's happening in the first place. That purpose is ultimately oriented towards the Messiah coming in to save the world. That they are the heralds of all of the what St. Paul calls the oracles of God, the Old Testament scriptures, and this message that there is only one God and that he's sending a Messiah. And Jesus comes into the world and fulfills all of this. So he then does two things. In Mark 7, he tells the people, do you not see that whatever goes into a man from outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his heart but his stomach and so passes on? In other words, he explains that whole system of living was not because those things themselves were morally significant. That whole system of living was to train them so that their hearts could be wholeheartedly for God, rather than that God really cared about, you know, whether you had a 55-45 cotton polyester blend. And so Mark says in Mark 7, thus he declared all foods clean. Now, significantly, he doesn't explicitly declare all foods clean. He's just showing those kosher laws have now been fulfilled, because we get the point of them. Give your heart completely to God. Give your heart completely to the thing God has set you to do, and then eat what you will, because that's not what the question is about. But then they don't obviously understand this implication of Jesus's teaching. And so in Acts 10, Peter is told in a dream, rise, Peter, kill and eat. With a whole like picnic blanket, it's a sheet, but I envision a picnic blanket full of different meats. It's a God-given dream. It sounds amazing. And Peter says, you know, no, Lord, for I've never eaten anything that is common or unclean. And then he's told, what God has cleansed, you must not call common. And so they weren't getting Jesus's teaching in Mark 7. And so it's spelled out very explicitly in Acts 10. And this is connected to opening the doors of the church to the first Gentiles. Now, part of that's purely pragmatic. Peter, the next day, is going to be invited to the house of Cornelius. And he has to be able to go into the house and not be worried that he's going to be rendered ritually impure by his contact with this Gentile and whatever food he may be offered there and so on. But second, there's a close connection between these two things, because the whole Jewish approach of we've got to stay very pure and, you know, cut off undue influence from the outside and everything else is good at avoiding sort of outside contamination of polytheism. But at a certain point, you do have to go out and evangelize the rest of the world. And so in Acts 10, we see, like, you can't just stay huddled up, afraid of the world. You have to actually go out in the world and make disciples of all nations, including the Gentiles. And so you're going to have to be able to interact with the Gentiles. And to the extent these kosher laws were holding people back from that, God makes it very clear to stop letting these get in the way, because they no longer apply.
Okay.
Right, good. Okay, that explains it. Yeah.
Very good.
Good. Happy to hear it.
Well, I think you already heard that it's Gordon Hayward Day here at Catholic Answers, so we're giving away a free book to every caller. So all you have to do is hang on the line, and we will get that book to you. I'm going to go quickly to Jason in Virginia, listening on the EWTN app. Glad you're here, Jason. Do you want to try to answer our quiz question, or you want to go right to your question?
I have no idea what he was wearing.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Totally understandable.
Go ahead with your question.
Oh, so thank you so much for taking my call. I've been perturbed by this for a couple of years, and one of my friends who's a sociology major, social worker, for even the mentally ill, said that she honestly thinks that people should be euthanized if they don't contribute to society. And, like, it's really hit a nerve with me on a deep level in a dark way. And, like, I know that the Catholic Church doesn't believe in euthanasia or suicide. And, like, I just want to get not only, like, the Catholic godly response, but maybe like a intellectual one as well. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean. Like a.
I do.
Like, you know. Yeah.
Can I recommend a book for you?
Sure.
There's a short and I think very easily readable book called Eugenics and Other Evils by G.K. Chesterton, and it's from 1922. But he's warning against the evils of eugenics that we saw play out in World War II long before they happened. And I think a lot of the things he's warning about would be relevant today. So I hope that helps.
Jason, thanks. Hang on. We want to send you a free book if you'd like it. Our guest is Joe Heschmeyer. Our topic, whatever you got on your mind, it's Ask Me Anything, 888-318-7884. Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. It's Ask Me Anything. And Jason in Virginia was asking what the Catholic stance on eugenics is. And Joe and I both felt we didn't quite give Jason enough time. So I just wanted to see, Jason, if you wanted to do a follow-up question on what Joe had to say.
Sure. Like, I guess for anybody who's feeling, like, say, useless in like a utilitarian type of world, like, what would be your response to that situation?
Yeah.
I'm
very glad you followed up, because I hadn't even understood that aspect of the question, and that's such an important aspect. First, you are not made to serve machines. Machines were made to serve us. And so the people acting like we're worthless if we can't operate machines to the satisfaction of the small handful of people who own the machines are doing something that is gravely evil against their neighbor, and they will stand judged by God for this. And that is worth stressing. Like, you are not your salary or your potential salary. You are not the number of hours that you can work in a week. And there are many reasons, things like personal illness and frailty and age and everything else, that can factor into why someone isn't as productive as they want to be. And your worth, your dignity is not and should not be wrapped up in any of that. That if you did nothing else, you are good, and God would not have made you if you were not good. Good in the sense that it is good that you exist. Good in the sense that God has a good plan for your life. You have to cooperate with that plan. But that plan doesn't turn on how many hours you can churn out products the way that the plan of the world does. That there is a deeply dehumanizing vision that the market and the world has of the human person. And it will crush all of us if we don't stand up to it and say, that's not where I find my value. That's not where I find my identity. I'm a son or a daughter of God. And whether I'm the greatest consumer or the greatest producer doesn't mean anything to me. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Good.
And I guess, since you're giving away a free book today, maybe, that book you recommended, I know that's
unfortunately, I don't think we have that one in stock, but I'd be happy to recommend it. And I think you can actually get it for free. I want to see if you can get it for free. Just Chesterton Eugenics. If you look that up, I see it is for free on, Gutenberg. And so you can get it for free or cheap because it's like 100 years old now. So it shouldn't be, I think it's in the public domain.
Cool.
Hang on for your free book, Jason, because we would love to send you that. And thanks for hanging on and doing a follow-up with us. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right.
It looks like it's like $6 on Amazon if anyone wants to buy it. And I think it is a very time. There's a couple things in there where it's made it maybe a little dated, but I think it's surprisingly timely, which is unfortunate given the state of the world.
Good Lord, I know you would be like, but nothing, no moral issue is ever finally resolved, is it? Generation after generation, same moral issues come back up again and again and again.
And unfortunately, it can seem that way for sure.
Joshua in Oklahoma, listening on 97.3 FM. Thank you very much, Joshua, for the call. Go ahead with the question for Joe. Oh, wait, did you want to answer our quiz question?
I don't know.
It makes me feel so much better about our listeners that they don't know about what you did at last year's conference, Joe.
My defense, I am a revert from 10 years, so I had no clue what was going on with the church for 10 years. So,
well this is one part of the life of the church you're glad you had no part of for those 10 years, Joshua. But, and I second what Joe said, welcome back. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Thank you. First of all, Joe, I love your YouTube series. I've recently got hooked onto it. So thank you so much for doing
Wonderful.
Those.
Thank you very much.
So I kind of ran into a conundrum at work this past week with my supervisor, who is a Protestant pastor. I don't know the denomination. I actually don't think there is one. I think it's just an independent church that he runs.
Okay.
In passing, he made a comment saying that he refuses to submit to the authority of our manager, his manager, who is a female, because she is a female, quoting 1 Timothy 9.
I see.
And my brain goes, what? Doesn't make any logical sense, because I know the context is way out of basis. But I don't know how to properly address this sorry, my brain's all confuddled right now.
It seems perfectly clear. So 1 Timothy 2, St. Paul talks about men and women learning, and he says in a very particular liturgical context, I permit no woman to teach or to have authority over men. She is to keep silent. But this was never understood to literally mean women can't speak in church or something like this. There are certain roles that are reserved for men. This also has literally no bearing on your secular workforce and was never meant to. If you look at the context, that's just not what is being talked about at all. This whole section is in the passage that the RSV calls instructions concerning prayer. And part of what Paul is doing is trying to create more of a sense of order in what were often seemingly pretty raucous spiritual experiences in the early church. And so it's not saying like women are never allowed to lead anything. A good, you know, example of this is women are given positions of leadership even in the home. Like, you know, certainly they are to lead their children. Now, maybe once you turn 18, you miraculously just ignore your parents from now on. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I like my first thought actually went to Our Lady.
Yes.
And the miracle at Canaan when Jesus, it's not my time. And she goes, fix it. And he does.
Yeah. You are free to bring that up. I've heard some Protestants try to say that when he says, woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour is not yet come. That he is scolding Mary. Now, I think that's a bad read. One, because it misses the whole context of what's going on in John 1 to 2 without getting way in the rabbit hole. John 1 begins the same way as Genesis in the beginning and then has a series of 6 days. The wedding feast is the sixth day. On the sixth day, you have the creation of woman. And it's at this point that he greets his mother as woman. He's not saying like, hey, lady, or something like that. And then second, if he was scolding her, saying, don't ask for anything, pretty strange that he then does the miracle she's asking for. Like, that read just seems to be colored more by a hostility to Mary and maybe a hostility to women than it does by an actual faithful reading of Scripture. So, really, I think you have two things going on here. One, you've got this potentially, like, job-ending refusal to obey one's legitimate superiors. And you can go through history and find cases where God does put women in positions of authority. So go back to the Old Testament, to Judges, for example, and you have Deborah. And so we know there are times where, in a secular setting, women are called to lead. And if somebody who was under their service, rather than submitting to their leadership, said, oh, no, you're a lady, I'm not going to submit to you, that's not the actual Christian response. It's not the actual biblical response at all. So that's one issue. The second issue is, it sounds like this guy is accountable to no one in his interpretations of the Bible. And so it's just kind of like Christianity is whatever he says it is. That's a very modern and very destructive theological idea. And it's worth pressing him on that too, because that, I think, is actually the thing behind everything else. If he's the pope of his own religion, and he doesn't have infallibility pretty clearly here, that's going to spell disaster in a bunch of different ways in his life. And so figuring out, like, okay, where in the Bible do we see everybody just doing this, forming their own churches and all that? And the answer is nowhere. That's not done. And when people do split off from the people of God and try to offer their own worship, like with Korah in Numbers 15, he creates a schism in the church, or in the, you know, in Israel. And so God responds by opening up the earth, creating a literal schism, and Korah and his followers are sucked into the earth and killed. And the point there is, like, we're not to act like Korah, and we're not to act like those who think we can just break away from the church given to us by God. And we're told that actually explicitly in Jude 1:11. So I would say to that, like, you want to address both things, a particular issue, but then also this broader issue where it's not just that he won't submit to the authority of a woman, seemingly won't submit to the authority of anybody. And that rebelliousness is called out explicitly in the Epistle of Jude and in 2 Peter 2.
The funny thing about this whole situation is that he is the one who trained me when I first started working in this company a year ago, which is actually when I started my move back into the church. And is I actually have to prompt him because he attacked. He found out that I was a Catholic or had been a Catholic. And then I had been in seminary. And so he just started attacking, you know, well, why do y'all believe this? Why do y'all believe that? And it was like nothing I could, like, I just, these answers just flowed out of me. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Beautiful.
And it was really because of that, like, I really started, like, I need to come back home.
Yes. That's wonderful. Well, I'm glad. It seems like he's pricked your conscience in a good way. And maybe you can repay him the favor by helping him to see the light a little more.
I'll tell you what.
That was kind of the hope.
Yes, and it's a well-founded hope. I think it is a well-founded hope. The Holy Spirit is moving. I'll tell you what, Joshua. I'd like to send you the Big Book of Catholic Answers. Lots and lots of answers to all kinds of challenges to the Catholic faith. And we'll send you another book too, because everybody's getting a free book today because it's Gordon Hayward Day here at Catholic Answers. But I want to add the Big
Book. I hope he's listening to this and is totally mystified.
Why are we having Gordon Hayward Day at Catholic Answers? Because Joe Heschmeyer's on. In other words, what I would like for you to have, Joshua, is the Big Book of Catholic Answers and any other Catholic Answers book you would like. I got to take a break. Right back with more. Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN Radio broadcasts 24/7 on smart speakers, a worldwide shortwave radio service, and radio services for the Philippines, Great Britain, and Ireland. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Joe's book, Pope Peter, is now out in audiobook format. That's why we're giving away a free copy of the audiobook version of Pope Peter to anyone who can answer our quiz question for today, which is, what was unusual about Joe's attire at the at last year's Catholic Answers Conference when he gave the opening address? If you know the answer, call up and we'll give you a free copy of Pope Peter, the audio version. The new audio version that is out now, read by himself, Joe Heschmeyer.
Yes.
Let us go to Tennessee now, where Lad is watching on YouTube. Always nice to get to go to Tennessee. Hey, Lad, got a question for Joe?
Yes, thanks, Si. I have been, well, I'm a convert and came into the church in April, and I've talked to you a couple of times.
Oh, well, God bless you. Came into the church in April.
With them.
Yeah, welcome home.
Yeah. And I actually was able to get a question answered while you were gone away, Si. I think it was last week on your anniversary. But anyway.
Man, you do listen. What do we call it? Liberation.
Liberation Day.
When I leave, it's called Liberation Day. Yeah. All right, so
but
you...
Just so you'll know, I do have your book, Si.
Well, that makes me feel better about the fact that you enjoy the show more when I'm not here. So at least that makes me feel better.
Well, no, I just had a good question answered by Joe.
Okay,
well,
okay. All right.
But this question is about the year of Jubilee. How do we go about? I mean, I'm not able to travel to Rome, obviously, unexpectedly. But I am able to go to sites around, for example, in Tennessee, and we do have several places that have been designated as places for Jubilee year. And my goal is to, like, visit at least seven. I read something about if you go to seven and you get participate in the Eucharist and, you know, have a devotion there, that... Seven, what's good? I don't know. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah,
what I read
but that is a long tradition. The seven churches of Rome, the seven major basilicas of Rome.
Okay.
That's a long. That goes back to St. Philip Neri.
That makes very good sense. So my question is about the indulgence. What exactly is the difference in a partial indulgence and a plenary plenary indulgence, yeah. or what is, help me yep. understand.
Sure, absolutely. Go ahead, Joe.
A little better.
So it's the difference between having less time in purgatory and having no further time in purgatory. Plenary just means complete.
Right.
I don't want to say like a prison sentence being completely commuted versus partially, you know, reduced, but that at least helps express mm-hmm. the idea, I think, neatly. So the things that you're looking for is there's the indulgenced act, the thing that you're being encouraged to do. So in the case of a pilgrimage, making a visit to any of the four major basilicas in Rome, and several other churches in Rome also meet this. You only have to go to one of them. You don't have to go to like every church in Rome. Outside of Rome and outside mm-hmm. the Holy Land, it just says by visiting the cathedral or other church or sacred place designated by the local ordinary, that means the bishop. Bishops are to take into mm-hmm. account the needs of the faithful as well as the opportunity to reinforce the concept of pilgrimage with all its symbolic significance so as to manifest a great need for conversion and reconciliation. So it should actually be like a special event. It isn't like, oh, you know, I'm on my way to go get coffee, but I'm driving by the cathedral, might as well duck in. It should have a greater significance than that. But in terms yeah. of just the validity of the thing. Yeah, go ahead.
So my plan, we have three dioceses here in Tennessee, Knoxville, Nashville, and the Memphis. And I was planning to visit each cathedral. Of course, I live closer to the Nashville. But we sure. also have a minor basilica in Chattanooga, and I would like to go there also. For a
yeah, I would
trip
I would
there,
check
you know
the
mean.
Parish or the diocesan website to see if it's connected uh-huh. with like the official. I mean, it's not bad to do either way, but in terms of just knowing if you can uh-huh. receive an indulgence for it. Now, typically, you're allowed to have you're allowed to receive one indulgence per day. In the case of the Jubilee uh-huh. year. And indulgences for those who've already died, you can actually receive two in a day if you go to Mass twice or if you receive communion twice in the same day. So in addition to okay. going to the church, you also need sacramental confession within a reasonable span of time before or after. You need to receive Holy Communion. You need to pray for the intentions of the Pope. And then the tricky one is you need to be free from attachment to sin. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have what's called concupiscence, a desire for sin. It means that you're not giving yeah. in to that desire for sin at all. If you are still struggling with that last part, you're still going to receive a partial indulgence. The fact that you're trying, okay. God is going to reward that. But you want to strive to just say, like, I don't actually want to let any sin in the door. And so even if I know I'm going to fail mm-hmm. that, I am striving to be free of attachments to any sin, large or small. That, if you can do those things, that's what you do to get a plenary indulgence. And so, you know, if you wanted to go on back-to-back days to each of those cathedrals or, you know, maybe different weeks or whatever else, that's a marvelous way of getting to experience pilgrimage and doing some real good spiritual work as well.
Well, I thank you. I have been trying to go to confession quite often because since I've Lovely. Converted from Protestantism, I've just been really aware of everything. You
yeah.
know, and it's been about 3 years.
Yeah,
so I'm
and
not,
that's well, actually, I think that's a good thing, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. I have found that if, in those times in my life when I have been regular and frequent in confession, that makes you more aware. You have a greater awareness. Mm-hmm. of your sinfulness and your need for God's mercy. Have you found that, lad?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Are you going to drive to these churches, or will you take the train to Chattanooga?
Oh, yeah. See, since I live in the middle of the state, I'm able to get to, you know, I will probably, when I go to Memphis, because we have a Marian shrine, actually, in Memphis, and to that cathedral, I will probably go and spend the night, and like you were saying, do two, one day and one the next.
Wonderful.
But
nice,
I can
that's
drive
terrific.
To Chattanooga. I can drive to Chattanooga and Knoxville and come back. It'll be a long day, but I can do it.
I mean, you probably heard that we're giving away free books to everybody because it's Gordon Hayward Day here at Catholic Answers. So if you want to just hang on the line, I'm going to keep going because I'm realizing I've got more Tennesseans to get to. We actually have more Tennesseans to get to. So I'm going to keep moving. Lad, thank you for the call. Hang on to get your free book. Dan's in Nashville, Tennessee, watching on YouTube. Dan, welcome. Do you know our quiz question answer?
I hope so. Yeah. He was wearing a Baroque outfit last year.
Go for Baroque.
Super Baroque. Yes.
Super yeah, Baroque.
It Baroque the internet.
And I even got a chance to ask a question. So, yeah, we were there last year.
All right. Oh, that's very good. All right. So you're going to get Joe's best-selling book, Pope Peter, the audio book version. You'll also get another book before you go. But so we get you an answer. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, so I've had this concept for quite some time that everything that's happened from the beginning of time to now and to the end, this is all by design. I mean, everything from the fall of Adam to everything that's happened. And it was reinforced that, I guess for once, I actually tried to listen to the Exalted. And there's a certain line in there when they were talking about Adam and they say, oh, necessary sin. And, you know, once again, that just sort of reinforces that, you know, without the fall of Adam, you really didn't need Jesus. So I just sort of want to get your take on this and see what you had to say.
Yeah, that is it's a profound line, because what is kind of meant by that is a bit of a debate. And whether Christ would have come into the world if Adam and Eve had not sinned is something that great theologians and saints in the church have disagreed on. And so St. Thomas Aquinas pretty famously says sin was necessary for Christ to become incarnate in the sense that Christ came into the world to resolve the problem of sin. And so if there'd been no problem of sin, he wouldn't have come into the world. But you'll have others usually from more the Franciscan saints and theologians who will say one of the things God's wanting to do is create union with us. This depth of union that's called divinization or theosis, that God became man, that man might become God, is the kind of shocking way that the early Christians describe it, that we are to be, as St. Peter says, partakers of the divine nature. And so the second view says, well, maybe he still would have come into the world in order to have that kind of union with us, even if there wasn't this other problem of sin that had to be dealt with. And so in the end, it's a little bit of a counterfactual. If you think about it this way, if one of your kids drops a glass and you go into the kitchen, you might have been planning to go in the kitchen anyway. We don't know that. We do know that you, in fact, came into the kitchen because the glass was dropped. So someone who is very excited to see you would be like, although I'm sad about the glass, I'm happy that it caused you to come into the kitchen. So likewise with sin. Sin causes Christ to come into the world. Maybe he was going to do it anyway. We don't know. But we know that it is in response to sin that Christ comes into the world. The first prophecy of the incarnation is given in Genesis 3:15, immediately following the fall. And we know as well that we can't take that to just say, why not just sin? If sin brings about grace, why not just sin? Well, St. Paul says, if you say that, your condemnation is just. So, Romans 6:1, he warns, what shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin that grace may abound? By no means. So don't take this to mean sin is good or okay, but simply that every time sin exists, God permits it only because he can draw greater good out of it. There's more divine grace available in response to sin. And if that weren't the case, he would never permit it to happen in the first place.
Okay, yeah. Dan?
Yeah. Yep. Along the same lines, the other thing that I've always thought is, I've heard is that truly we only learn by suffering and by the failing and stuff. And so, if we went straight to heaven, we would never appreciate what we're going to have when it comes. And like I said,
there are aspects of God's nature, like his mercy, that we only know because of our experience with sin.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
I do think I would enjoy heaven either way, Dan. I really do. Anyway, I can get there, I think I'm going to be okay if I get there. Hang on, we're going to send you the audiobook of Pope Peter.
If I can give a quick shout out, Jonathan had a question about biblically accurate angels.
Yes,
those images are coming from Ezekiel 1, from Daniel 10, from Isaiah 6. It's just like the eyes upon eyes and eyes on a wheel and all this stuff. People on the internet are having fun visualizing that and realizing how much scarier they are than the usual paintings of angels that you see.
Jonathan, calling from America's very best beach town, we'll be happy to give you a free book, too. I'm sorry we weren't able to get you on the air, but hang on. We'll give you a book to celebrate Gordon Hayward Day. Our guest has been Joe Heschmeyer. His much-praised book is The Eucharist is Really Jesus, and he's got a whole bunch of great books. Joe, thank you. I always enjoy the hours with you.
My pleasure.
And it wasn't Flannel Panel today. You did right.
It was Beach Boys Day.
See you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.